Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Cut to the main topic tonight. We're discussing two events tonight. The main topic is the Portland, Oregon stabbing incident that happened May 26. Jeremy Joseph Christian, a 35-year-old, was arrested for killing Taliesin Namke, which is actually a white guy, but it doesn't sound like it. Taliesin Namke Meche, a 23-year-old, and Rick Best, a 53-year-old, who were trying to protect two Muslim women on a train. He was uttering slurs. He was also, Jeremy Joseph Christian was also drinking sangria from like a red pouch on the train. I want to read a segment of the article so our listeners have a full understanding of what happened. So here was this guy, a 35-year-old named Jeremy Christian, who was drinking sangria from a large bladder-style bag and began shouting anti-Muslim slurs when he spotted two young women in hijab, according to the deputy district attorney Ryan Lufkin of Multnomah County in Oregon. Now, there's two parts to this segment. There were three white men in the train. One was Micah Fletcher, a 21-year-old student who survived, and he stood up to Christian. Now, he got stabbed in the neck but survived in the hospital. The other two weren't so lucky. Apparently, there was a fourth guy who confronted Christian but did not get attacked. One passenger tried to intervene. The women moved away from Christian. Surveillance video shows that Christian turned his attention to Namke Mech, who's like this white guy with long blonde hair. and a very likable person, according to the eulogies. It wasn't clear what Meche said, but he drew Killer's attention, and he stood up and began arguing back. Fletcher then stood up and pushed Christian hard enough to make him stumble, and then Christian pulled out a folded knife from his pocket and concealed it in his hand. After a shoving match ensued, Christian first stabbed Fletcher, then Namke Meche, the documents say. Now, two people ended up dying. One was hurt, as I said, but later in the week, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler was, speaking about this on the nightly news, and apparently there had been a rally planned, an anti-Sharia law planned in Portland, Oregon for June 10th, but it was canceled because Portland Mayor Wheeler said that it would put the participants at risk of violence. Then the organization said that they would march in Seattle instead. Wheeler had called upon the U.S. government to revoke a permit for the event that was anti-Sharia law. It was billed as a pro-President Trump free speech rally and not to issue a permit for the rally against Islamic law. Both of the demonstrations were planned on federal property. Wheeler said the city is in mourning from last week's triple stabbing on a light rail train. Now, here's one thing I want to bring up. In lieu of the fact that congressman got injured and had to have three surgeries, I saw a lot of comments on Twitter saying that whether we're on the left or the right, we should understand that there's victims on both sides. Now, I don't believe these two Muslim women got hurt, but maybe Ben can shed some light on if there's radical right people in Oregon. I thought Seattle, I'm not sure about Portland, but I thought Seattle was a pretty liberal town. Albert and Don are on the line. Thank you for joining us. And Don has some comments tonight, too, about some shootings in Reno. So I'm going to pull in Ben first. Good evening, Ben. Good evening,
hey,
Albert.
How's it going?
And good evening, Don.
Hi there.
Hi, everybody. I know it was a hectic night for Don. I got to see John Yoder today,
Don.
And he...
Did you hear
Don,
me?
Don, he wished you a happy...
What was that? You said it was busy for Ben, didn't you? Or me?
No, I said it was busy for Don, but Ben said happy birthday to Don from last week.
Hey, happy birthday. Thank you very much, Ben.
Happy birthday.
Hi. Don is officially a senior citizen now.
Pretty much. I've got 62 years old. I will be collecting Social Security in the next month and a half, and I'll be ordering my rocker and my wheelchair probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
But yet he's still driving Uber.
Yep, and I'm getting ready to hopefully get a organizer job for one of our agencies here, our organizations here, and or a consulting job with a political group. So I don't know how long I'll be driving Uber as much as I do, but it'll be a different change.
Well, their CEO just got replaced, and they're having major problems. But
Major problems.
Albert. John's on the line, and Albert, let's say hi to Albert. How was your move, Albert?
Well, it's going really slow, slowly but surely. It's really hot right here in the desert. Today, it hit 122 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's been around that every day. Really hot. I mean, so hot when you go outside, you feel like your eyes are burning. But anyways, so I try to stay home during the daytime. I actually have a, I guess like a migraine or kind of like a small headache right now. It's not that big. It's a small headache. So I'm going to be taking it easy right now.
Okay, we won't be hard on you. It was about 95, I'd say, today in Los Angeles and about 90 in Santa Monica where I saw John. Good evening, John. How are you doing?
Hello, Jane Hoffman.
So we're broadcasting live from the 90210. And I've already, Ben and Albert heard my intro. It was about Jeremy Joseph Christian, who killed two people in Portland, Oregon, trying to defend two Muslim women on a train. So I was ask Ben first, what are the political demographics in Portland and Seattle? Are they pretty split like the rest of the country, like half right, half left?
Well, it's extreme. So if you read some of the history about Oregon, that was, it started out kind of being white territory. As far as I think the KKK moved to Oregon, a lot of them, and they wanted to make a white only state, and that didn't work out. And I don't condone that at all. But if you read some of the history,
that's pretty bad.
It's kind of creepy. If you read into it, but actually they have a very extreme left liberal governor, and anytime you have one extreme or the other in charge, of course the radical people are going to be always upset. So I think that's kind of what's going on in Portland. It's kind of like a convergence zone between extremes. There's not a whole lot of middle center people there. You're either left, far left, or hate it, far right.
One thing the article said is they were praising the three white men for protecting the Muslim women, but then Michael Fletcher, one of the defenders of the women, said that they're only focusing on the heroes, not the women who were actually persecuted. So, like, he was trying to be an ultra-martyr and drawing attention to the fact as to why Jeremy Christian hated these women, like trying to bring it full circle. It didn't get much national attention, though, I noticed. You know? Did it get attention up there, Ben?
No, it was kind of a blip on the radar. I didn't spend any time dwelling on it. I read it, and I was like, okay, that's too bad. But, of course, you can expect things like that. You're seeing it all over the country.
Well, it just seems rather isolated. Like, okay, it's not isolated just because only a few people died, but just because, let's just say you're a right-winger and you don't like Muslims and you're scared of anti-Sharia law. I mean, what percent of the population is going to wield a knife in a public train and try to kill people? Like, they might give dirty looks, but... it is. I thought it was kind of an unusual case. And then the two people that tried to defend the women, one was 23 and the other was 53. It was quite a huge range of types of people who defended. And they, two out of the three men died within that situation. So I thought it was fairly tragic.
Yeah, well, you know, even if you had a radical Islamic try to pull a knife out, if he tried to do that in the ghetto, he'd be shot and stabbed before he can even get anybody else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's not an Islamic, though. He was a white supremacist type who, well, we don't know exactly what his makeup was, but he was angry at the two black Muslim women for wearing hijabs.
I have a question about
I think,
do you think...
Yeah.
So do you think that if the two or three guys didn't stand up to that guy and try to stop him from speaking, do you think it would have just been insults and then it would have been all over? Do you think it got confrontational because they got in his face?
I don't think they had enough foresight. I think because the guy was drinking and he was probably hostile, somebody probably felt compelled to say something, but if they would all kept their mouth shut and kind of like averted their attention, who knows, maybe he would never even gotten to that level. So that was a very good question. John, what do you think?
It seems like if you...
I think with men, when it gets to confrontational, aggression and testosterone kicks in and it goes to a different level. Now, women catfight too, but they're more like they pull their hair and they scratch. Guys get out guns and knives and baseball bats and really go to town. I'm not saying that women aren't violent, but they're kind of more dramatic, like for effect. Like they do want to scream and yell in public. Usually when they're screaming and yelling, it's a gal, you know. With guys, they yell at each other and then it goes physical, you know, or they call it a night. It's like, you know, get out of my face, and you know, they kind of call it. Usually it's, what happens is more like, I'm going to beat you up, and then the buddies jump in and go and hold them back, and then they become more brave. Like, oh, you know, come back here, you know, I'll bring it on, and that's the end of the thing. Whereas gals, they like to be catty, and we almost want to see them fight. Like, go ahead, go for it, you know. Pull her hair out.
One of the guys who was killed, the 23-year-old, like he had long, flowing blonde hair. He kind of looked bohemian. Like, I'm pretty sure he, like, calmly, at first he probably calmly told that guy to stop. But then other Fletcher guy jumped in when he thought, the one who lived, Michael Fletcher, jumped in when he thought that guy was getting borderline dangerous. Like, he tried to trip the guy up. And not until he tripped did he pull out the folded knife. So who knows in a drunken state how offended he was. Like, he was probably thinking that he was the victim at that point. Who knows?
I think you'll see more aggressiveness towards, on both sides. I think you'll see conservative people. I'm talking more extreme conservative or neoconservative people. They're going to start acting out because people copycat and things go to a different level. And pretty soon the next person says, I can do better than that. So I think you'll see attacks against – I think there was another deal where someone ran a van into like a mosque area and hit some people. I think you'll see a lot of that going on, and it's going to get more volatile than less volatile in the next couple of years, I think.
Well, let's have Don take that question about isolated versus common incidents, because I heard there was some unusual violence in Reno this weekend.
Yeah, there was last weekend we had four separate young male killings, and it was quite a weekend. Two of them we knew. One of them had gone to school with my kids, they were friends of my kids. And so it was a real strange weekend because we also had one of our NAACP members die, and then we had another one die this morning, a close friend of mine. So we've got people who are dying at an inordinate rate, and it's bothering us all here in northern Nevada because this is a combination of the young people who are killing themselves, more or less, and then older people who are just dying off. And we've got to be very, very aware of who we deal with because we need to make sure that they're all right. Anybody. So,
the two people who died... From NAACP, they just died because it was their time, right?
Right. It was more or less they were older, and so they were susceptible. One was 86, and the other was 73 or 74, something like that. So, yeah, it was pretty much their time.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And usually in the mainstream media, you know, if there's, like, a murder – and it happens to be a murder done by a gun, it gets a lot of attention in the mainstream media, lots of attention. Unless it was a cop that committed the murder with the gun, then it'll get hardly no attention by the mainstream media. Now you'll hear that all by the independent media, but that's usually how it goes in the mainstream media.
Well, they just had the big trial of Philando Castile, who shot someone and was tried for manslaughter and got off. So that was a situation where a police used a gun.
Well, going back to Albert State, I'm thinking, though, aren't there like thousands of murders each year? And there's under 1,000 cop killings in a year. But I think the cop killings get more notoriety, especially if it's a minority, than in comparison to other murders which happen all the time. Especially, we've gone over the statistics with blacks killing blacks. It's like that doesn't get the same notoriety as a white cop kills African American or minority.
I get what you're saying, and I wanna emphasize that yes, there are more people murdering more people than there are cops murdering people. But there are more cops murdering a lot more cops murdering people than there are people murdering cops. I remember in 2015, it got up to 1,000. It was like 1,000 something. I don't remember what it was. The cops murdered people that year. And when it came to people murdering cops, it was only like half a dozen, and this is like, this is like 6 versus 1,000 basically, within a year.
The question, cause statistics can kind of lie, cops stop millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people in friendly and in dangerous situations, and half the time they don't know what's a dangerous situation, until it becomes one. And they do have a gun. They're trying to enforce the law with people that are drunk, people who are disorderly, people who are mentally ill. Now, most of us, I've never had to stop anyone. Maybe once in a lifetime I see a couple of people wanting to fight, and I'll come over and say, hey, dudes, can you kind of tone it down? Or usually 90% of the time it's like, I'm calling 911. I'll let the cops deal with this. So I think most of us realize the cop has a gun and he's an authority figure. Why am I going to mess with that? Like that for 99% of us, like with the brain, we go, I'm not even dealing with that. But a criminal is going, I think I can get by on a cop. I think I can, push this, and the cop's got to deal with these kind of people. So I don't know if the numbers are, it's like this one gal said, listen, he said, we're concerned about, terrorists, about the radical Islam. And they started giving the statistics, I think 20% of terrorists, 25% of terrorist attacks are Muslims, and the rest are white people. I go, yeah, but there's only like, 15,000 radicals or so in the country, that are known. But it's like there's millions of Americans here, many of them mentally ill. So if you had 50 million radicalized Islamists, I think the numbers would be a little bit different if you go statistically. I think it's kind of hard to make a comparison.
Yeah. Well, but look, let me finish
but
real quick.
Let me
just finish real quick. Like, when I said that, versus, 1,000, 1,000 kills done by, when I said 1,000 kills that police killed people and 6 that people killed cops, and yet the mainstream media covers the other part. When a person kills a cop, it's all over the mainstream media. But when a cop kills a person, which they do more versus the other way, the media don't intend to – the mainstream media hardly don't intend to cover that. Even though there's
you are,
cops,
I do want to cut in a quick. You are right in many ways, because cops kill people every day, but a lot of times it's not unusual enough, or there isn't a racial bent, and we don't hear about it. But I want to get the conversation. We can still discuss that, but I want to contour the discussion in this direction. So Jeremy Christian was a white nationalist. I found a headline that will make Ben and John laugh. Facebook shows a man with nebulous political affiliations who hated circumcision and Hillary Clinton. But what's the difference between someone what's the difference between someone who decides to pull a knife on a train against other civilians because of his contradictory ideological views and his misfit status in society, like hating certain groups and liking others, versus a scared cop who shoots Philando Castile at a designated police stop, versus the crazy guy from Ohio who shot the congressman at a baseball game? So I don't want to so much do the police civilian thing, but try to point out what are the composite characteristics of anyone who does anything like way off the radar or out of the norm?
Well,
Ben or Don, could you take that? Or somebody else? Go ahead.
Yeah, I could tell you the difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, the difference is if a stranger comes after you with a knife, you know that he doesn't have any jurisdiction or any power over you. And you got to do whatever you got to do to defend yourself. And if you kill, if you stab, let's just say, if he grabs you, messes with you, and maybe he stabs you and then you kill him, then, you know, you have the right. But if it's a police officer and he has the jurisdiction, he has the law advantage, and if he punches you or even breaks your head open with his baton, and you end up killing him, you know, the story might go otherwise, and, you know, the other, you know, in general, the policeman will win in most cases. That's how it normally is here in the U.S.
Okay, I understand, but can you give someone else a chance? Because I know Don has limited time tonight.
Go ahead, Don.
I think he's uber occupied. Well, I guess here's a question, Albert. I think there's a natural cause and effect for things. Like, in other words, I don't think half the stuff we call accidents are accidents. Like, I'll give you an example. There's this French fitness model. She opened a can of whipping cream, blew up, hit her in the chest, you know, hit her heart and gave her a heart attack, and she died. You go, man, that's a freak, you know, random accident. It's like, yes and no. You have a pressurized container, and you figure, you know, out of 50 million containers, something's going to blow, and if it's pointed at a certain angle, it's going to hit. If it hits a certain angle in your body, you know, your face, your skull or whatever, it's like you're going to have some major problems. So you go, yeah, it was an accident, yes, but it's kind of like, you know, someone's tire is going to blow, and you're going to lose control, and someone's going to hit the, you know, center divider and die. So kind of going back to violence and police attacking people and people attacking cops, I think there's kind of a natural dynamic. It's just going to happen. You know, you're going to have people in fights. There are going to be disputes, and people are going to lose control. What kind of solution do you see to the problem, say, with cop abuse? What can be done to abate this?
John's on the air. I'm going to have Albert go briefly, and then Don can come because he works in police community relations.
Well, the main problem and solution is that the media, and the way we're misinformed and how we are informed and how we are told to feel about it. And the problem, like I said before, that yes, cops kill more people than people kill cops. But yet the media shows a lot of the people killing cops, but shows hardly nothing of the cops killing people. And, you know, it's kind of the media is really biased towards that. And you know, and I'm talking about the mainstream media, not independent media, but it's just mainly the mainstream media.
So are you saying cops like to kill people? Like they take their job and their inner desire is, I want to kill someone today. Here's my opportunity.
Not necessarily. I'm more mad at the media than I am at the cops. But the thing is that yes, the cops are all armed, and they are armed to the teeth. They, you know, nowadays they have shotguns, rifles, handguns, you know, bulletproof vests.
they drive around in tanks now, stuff like that. And yeah, the cops, cops are basically army nowadays. But and the thing is that yes, in many confrontations, you know, in most cases, the cop's gonna have the gun versus the other guy who's starting trouble doesn't have a gun. So you know, you bring a knife to a gunfight, who's gonna win? So yes, it's all. So yes, the cops do kill more people, but not necessarily because they're more evil or they're bad people or the way they're trained. Maybe, I don't even know, maybe it's the way they train, who knows. But the thing is that the cop is more armed than most criminals are. So it's naturally to have cops kill more people than people killing cops because that's the way they're armed.
Do you feel if we didn't have people in control, in other words, like, you know, things can only go to a certain level because police present. They're going to call in SWAT. They're going to call in the National Guard. They're going to call in law enforcement. Do you think if they weren't in control, that we didn't have that control factor, would we be safe? In other words, if criminals knew, you know, if we all just start just acting out and shooting things up and going crazy, they can't stop us.
You.
We got power, anarchy. Do you think the impression that cops are in control or the impression that they can't control anything? We can do whatever we want.
Well, of course. I mean, if it completely left control, I mean, it'll be like that movie Anarchy, but, you know, that the movie's a little bit exaggerated probably, but, you know, it'll be like that movie. But, you know, just to say that America does have more people in prison than any other country. I mean, we have if I remember, I think it's like what? Oh yeah, it's 1/4 of the total prison population, and we only hold I remember it's 1/4 of the prison population. Well, we don't hold many of the huge population. I mean, China and India are in the billions.
We already covered that. I want Don or Ben to talk now because they haven't been able to respond to anything you guys have said. So let them talk about the current state of events. Go ahead, Don. Don. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I'm on a ride. Hold on for a second.
Okay, Ben, you go while he's maneuvering.
Okay, so you wanted to get back to a question kind of comparing and contrasting the baseball shooter and the subway stabber. And I think it can go back to it can get really basically down to psychology. Their individual psychology is what caused these. And I think they're two totally different crimes. The first one was completely premeditated. The guy was a failure in his own life. He was upset with the election results, and he probably hated Republicans for decades. And he decided that his life was worth throwing away for this ideology that he has. The other crime might not have been a premeditated crime. That might have just been, you know, in the middle of a scuffle. It might have been just him insulting somebody and then put into a situation against three other people. You don't know. A knife is a close combat weapon. That's not really something that you premeditate somebody in a crowd. I mean, you have to be up
right.
front.
Right. He lost his temper after one of the people confronting him tripped him.
Right. So it's not like you can pick somebody out of a crowd and stab them from far away. You have to be right in their face, basically. So this might have been just a scuffle that got out of control. The other one was 100% premeditated.
Yeah, that guy from Ohio, like, what do you – I'll have since Albert wanted to keep talking and Don's Ubering, John or Albert, what do you think of the fact that this Ohio guy who Ben correctly portrayed as a loser, but – he still was savvy enough to know that there wasn't much security at these types of baseball games, in which I heard that they hadn't aired the Democratic-Republican baseball game for 10 years on C-SPAN or whatever, but like he was savvy enough to know that he could find a place where he could do the shooting without having to deal with much security or facing any type of scrutiny. So if someone could comment on that, it doesn't matter to me who does.
Yeah, I'm right now getting ready to give another ride. But I just wanted to comment on that because it's highly politically motivated. This guy had already had a lot of social hits that were about the Republicans and the Democrats. So he was looking for Republicans. He had already asked somebody there beforehand if it was a Republican baseball game. So he knew he was who he was shooting towards. He didn't necessarily know who they were, but if it weren't for the two security guards, there could have been many more people that were shot because he had a whole lot of ammunition. So then, you know, my thing is that these folks are starting to take things a little bit far, and you know that's how our country was made. So I can't say much about anything.
Okay, I wanna challenge you on that. Taking things a little too far with a knife or B a gun. I mean, I'm sure there's even this guy at my high school reunion described liberals in the most awful vitriol way, but he didn't have a knife or gun in his hand. I mean, what constitutes taking things too far?
Say something about that. It's not how this country was made. This country was made out of self-defense. It wasn't made on premeditated murder or terror. We're against tyranny and terror. That's what this country was made. And he was creating it. So totally wrong there.
Wrong. I was wrong. This guy, when you come to a person's house,
you admitted you were wrong.
No, I was saying Ben was wrong. No, I was saying Ben was wrong about me being wrong. Ben. When you go to somebody's house, and you.
That's the symbol for Don admitting he was wrong. Go ahead.
No, I didn't admit that I was wrong. I said Ben was wrong about me being wrong. So, when you go to somebody's house, and you. Sit down, break bread with them, and the next thing you know, you're killing them and raping their women and taking their land. That's an act of terror. That's an act of violence and
so where does it say we're going to start raping women in the Declaration of Independence?
Oh, it didn't say that, but they pretty much okayed it, seeing they were doing.
It was never okay.
No, it's
Don
not.
Doesn't think any white people are civilized, so he's never going to be able to answer that question.
Well, back in the day, it wasn't against the law to rape a black woman back in those days.
Yep, I've got a ride, guys. All right, I'll be
okay,
with
cool.
you. Okay, cool. All right.
You can just mute yourself. Okay, that was a good point, Albert, because it kind of puts things in perspective. John, do you have a comment?
Well, it's getting a little fiery here, but I think when you look at the history of any country, you're going to see some dirty pull, and you're going to see it whether it's a country's atheistic or Christian. So the question is, do you have the principles to correct flaws? To deal with your history, and what's the best choice? How do you proceed from there? Like everyone that you look at any religious faith, with Puritans or pilgrims, you know, they go into certain towns and it's like you had to conform to their code, and they felt the best way to handle it was to make certain laws. You couldn't act or do certain things. If you did, they would publicly shame you. And in some extreme cases, they would, burn you as a witch or hang you or kill you. It's like, but was that the protocol? Was that the standard deal? Or was that just in isolated instances? And how did the culture deal with it? How did it resolve it? How did they move forward? You know, like cultures would sacrifice people and you know, sacrifice virgins. But it's like, okay, we understand that's human behavior. All groups of people do that, you know, with armies. They kill people. So, but kind of in that dynamic of, is it avoidable? Is conflict avoidable? Can we avoid killing each other? It's an interesting question. I'm a peaceful person. I've yet to find. Well, I have people. I found out this week my first name is Mother, and my last name is Effer. I didn't know that. You know, my parents never told me that's my name. And you know, I have a person yelling at my face, shaking their fist. It's like, I've never attacked you or, you know, been mean to you. It's just like, where's all this anger coming from?
Yeah, and I like to get back what you said about
I think
the
that's
den.
A good. Go ahead, Albert.
Yeah, I like to go back to that on, you know, the gun. You know, like if you give somebody a gun and tell them he can just, you know, take that gun wherever he wants to on him all the time and inspect them, then he'll never, ever, ever have to use it. You'd be wrong. You know, you never know when that day might come. And, you know, and then by the way, it you know, in some states, like in California, you can't get a license to carry open, only a license to carry concealed. And some states, you can't even get both or either or, you know what I mean? So it's even if those states do allow you to get the concealed carry or open carry a gun, it's really hard to get it. Trust me, I know. I've tried to get it. You have to have good connections and good and have a business or carry lots of money or have lots of money and be somebody powerful or famous or something like that to even try to get those. So they're kind of hard, but I mean,
Albert, wasn't it interesting though in London? A guy doesn't have a gun, so he gets a van, right? And he's running people down with his van. And then he gets out of the van. What does he do? Pulls out a knife, starts slashing people, cutting the throats. People are jumping off into the Thames River. You know, you call the police, the bobbies, oh, they don't have guns. It's like, what are we going to do here? You know, it's like he didn't use a gun to create terror and to kill people.
In London, I mean, in London, there's less cops killing people than are the United States. I mean, the United States would like, when it comes to cops killing people, the United States is first place. But anyways, I mean, in London, you know, there's less crime than is in the United States. I mean, sure, there's crime there, but it's less.
They just burned down public housing buildings for sport. I want to ask Ben something.
Let me finish off.
Oh, go ahead. When you're done, Albert, I want to ask Ben something. Go ahead, Albert.
Yeah, for sure. And so let me finish off on what I was talking about, you know, the gun culture, right? I mean, like I said, it's hard to get a gun. So, I mean, you have a gun, and eventually you'll get into a confrontation where you might have to use it, and you might end up killing somebody versus, you know, and also, I mean, it goes for civilian and cop. A civilian carrying a gun or a cop carrying a gun, they're both human beings. So it doesn't matter if you're a civilian, you're carrying a gun, or if you're a cop, you're carrying a gun. Guess what? You're still a human being, and you're still going to get angry. You're still going to have maybe a motivation or some reason to make you angry and want to do it. The difference is that the cop has the jurisdiction, you know, and has the law behind him, and the civilian doesn't. But even though they're both human beings and they both get angry and they both commit murders, you know, the difference is the law's behind your back when you're on the other side.
So would you feel safer if cops were unarmed and humans were civilians were unarmed, like, you know, like basically in Korea or into you know, Nazi Germany or other places, just unarm the people?
Well, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that we're all human beings, and just because you're dressed in blue doesn't mean you can get away with it, because it happens a lot of times. You know,
right.
I think everybody should be held accountable for any murders.
And you know what I mean? And I'm saying this because, you know, I've seen a lot of murders.
Have a scuffle and say, you know, say some homies are, you know, banging or breaking into your house. You call the police, like 911, I have an emergency. There's a person here. They're dangerous. My life, I feel, is threatened. Do you want a cop showing up without a gun?
No, of course. I want a cop showing up with a gun. But here's the thing.
Which cops bring guns? Is it like this is the nice cop, and then I have another cop, I'm not sure. We're rating them. This cop doesn't have a gun because he's shown to be violent. Like in other words, are they all armed or are they not armed?
No, but here's the thing.
I want to touch on a point that, Albert, you were trying to point out that the England police, their police presence doesn't always – see, there's different levels of policing in every country, but every Western country has a terrorism unit. They may not visibly be carrying guns, but they're scouting things out. And even if those English cops weren't Johnny on the spot in that bridge explosion, there were still plenty of cops around with firearms. But I was trying to get at earlier something that nobody was able to answer, and that's according to Shane Burley, the Portland author of the upcoming book Fascism Today, he said that white nationalists have contradictory ideological beliefs. And we all know that people like ISIS, like radical extremists are out there. We're not so sure about the lone white nationalists or people who were anti-gay who blew up the Orlando club. So I wanted somebody else. I don't mind if you guys go on your tangents about who has more cops or who has less, but we kind of have to reel it in so everybody gets about 5 minutes sound bite and we're not leaving anybody out.
I want to answer his question while it's still recent, because he was asking me if they break in, right? I mean, if they were to, you know, guys were to break in and literally raping my wife and the cop's right there and he shoots them off, you know what I mean? Or let's just say the guy's stabbing me and the cop shoots him. You know, I mean, that'd be okay. But if he's running away, if he runs out the door and he's running away and the cop still shoots him while he's running away, that's wrong. But here's the thing. The law right here in the United States, and that's in almost every 50 states, it says is that if the guy has committed a violent act, you know, like try to, let's just say he was violent at the time, like at some point he was violent and he showed a gun or a knife or any kind of that. Even though if he's running away, the cops are legally allowed to shoot him while he's running away. That's, you know.
But they can't plant evidence. That's what's the difference in a lot of the regular shootings by people from people, the person to person. As opposed to the police. The police have ample materials in their cars to plant things on people. And that's what happens. They plant guns. They plant drugs. They're planting stuff on people along with hurting them, incarcerating them, killing them. And that's the case of the police, where the police have the upper hand, if you will, and then, you know, and that's wrong.
Well, yeah, they do have the advantages to do that, because obviously if you kill somebody and the cops show up, you can't plant it in front of the cop, or you can't plant it in front of the other people because they're going to say, hey, you're planting a gun, or you're planting a gun or a knife on him. You can't do it in front of the other people. But when a cops murder somebody, they could say nobody can get close. Everybody stay 20 feet away. We're going to put these walls here and these barricades, and you can't come anywhere near this location. And we're going to plant whatever we want or do whatever we want, and nobody can see what's happening because everybody has to stay behind a yellow line.
All right. Well, let me ask Don. Do you believe that Lavoy Finicum was murdered in Oregon?
Now, who is that? I'm not sure who that is.
He was the one that was standing next to Ammon Bundy through the protesting. Both of the Bundy Ranch Bundy Ranch and at Oregon, but Lavoy was the one that was killed. I think he was the best speaker, too.
Oh, he's the one with the they got him in the helicopter, like the helicopter got him in the video when the guy was shooting him with hands up.
Lavoy was the one who refused to, give up his gun or something like that when the Oregon state troopers came down to the ranch that the Bundys were at in Oregon. And he was just, he refused to give up his gun. They ordered him to give it up, and they
No. I think you need to watch the cell phone video from inside the truck.
Okay.
Because that's on YouTube.
I saw the videos outside the truck. And
okay, from inside the truck, you can hear the bullets hitting the truck when they're still driving. So that's why I wanted to bring this up, because this is one of the reasons why I'm glad Comey's gone, because that was his boys in Oregon who broke all kinds of laws. They fired shots, they picked up their shell casings, and they didn't report their shots fired. They had snipers in the trees waiting for Finicum. They had an illegal roadblock with a chase. They were tailing him. And he told them he's going to meet with the sheriff of the next county. So they set up an illegal roadblock on a blind corner on a downhill. They knew he would either have to hit the bank or hit the cars. And they were ready for it. It was an ambush. So I think that was murder. And I'm glad Comey's gone, because even if he wasn't calling the shots, he knew what happened.
Right.
And that's one of the things, the news didn't bring up the name of the people that killed him. He was shot from the front and back, I think.
Right, but he got out of the truck.
They told him to. They told him to put his hands up. He said, go ahead and shoot me. He had his hands up, and they shot a bunch of rounds, and they said they had non-lethal rounds. So maybe his hand came down when he got hit by a rubber bullet. You don't know.
Well, all I know is that the FBI, the Oregon State Police, anybody wearing a blue uniform is supposed to protect and serve. And right now, they are the terrorists that are causing the outcry from everybody else. They're the ones who are bringing out those ISIS feelings from whomever is an ISIS sympathizer. It's because they're trying to protect their own life, their own property, and they can't do it when you've got somebody who's instigating violence. That's the thing, and that's the main thing, is that nobody's instigating. When you get pulled over, when John gets pulled over, when I get pulled over, we are nice to the cops, because we know that they have the ability to shoot our ass off.
Right, but look what happened to the people that were nice. The Bundys and everybody else that got pulled over, they've been in jail for, what, 2 years now? A year and a half at least.
A year and a half, yeah.
So where is their Fourth Amendment, Tenth Amendment, Sixth? It's just been going and going and going. They've never pinned anything on them. They never got bail. They've just been sitting in a cell for something they weren't proven on this whole time.
That's why we are talking about this. We're talking about the police being the terror. That's why we're talking about the fact that the Constitution has been run over since the day they inked the last period. You know, this is not something that we can say, oh, the white man or whoever the man who controls whatever is not at fault, because they are at fault. They're the ones who are antagonizing everyone.
Right, for example, have a lot of leverage on the left. A lot of Democrats will hear your message. You have more power with Democrats than you do with Republicans, right?
Right.
Keeps happening. So the left side of things, they're anti-gun, they're pro-immigration, pro-minority, pro-LGBTQ, pro Black Lives Matter, but they're also the ones that call the shots on these things.
Hold on for a second. I've got a ride. I'll have to answer you later on. But for the most part,
okay.
I have a comment for Dan. Okay, go ahead, Don, and finish.
I just wanted to say every community has its own responsibility to make sure the community is policed. It's not exclusively the police's responsibility. And so everybody's got to take some blame. All right, you guys. I'll talk to you in a second.
Okay, Ben, not every liberal neatly fits in a category because, for example, I accept gays at large, but I'm not necessarily pro-gay rights. In other words, I'm not an advocate for gay rights. I'm neutral on abortion, and I'm fiscally conservative in some ways, and I'm not welcoming of mass immigration. I'm welcoming of selective immigration for people to for them to prune the number of people coming in. So
center left.
Right. I'm a moderate.
Right.
And because I'm a Southern Baptist, I don't necessarily just accept all the social doctrine that goes with being a liberal. Like Hillary marched in a pride parade in the last 2 days. So I'm not an openly active advocate for certain rights, but in some ways I'm not against it either. You know what I mean? Because it's hard to make a point sometimes.
That's all she's got left. Hillary, that's all she has left is that community. She really has ruined every relationship she's ever started because she just takes advantage as soon as people believe her. And she hasn't burned the bridge with the LGBTQF group. And so she went from a semi-conservative Goldwater girl and hated gays all through the 90s. And then she totally flipped and started waving the rainbow flag. So you can see her personality.
Well, even
right
Paul, even Paul Wellstone, who was killed in an airplane crash, the most liberal person in the Senate next to Bernie Sanders, he even voted against, he stated that marriage is between a man and woman without trying to piss off the gay community. So sometimes it is hard to take a stand. And Obama voted for a marriage is between a man and woman too while he was a senator and then embraced the rainbow side.
Well, I have some gay friends, but them being gay has nothing to do with me. And my views are nothing to do with their lifestyle. I could care less. But as soon as you start to form a community of people that aren't necessarily a community, and for example, the transgender community, that's an oxymoron because most of them are individuals who don't claim a community. So the ones that do are the loudest ones that get on the news, and a lot of them disagree with those ones.
Yeah, and you were talking
about
We
had a transgender Republican candidate on our show. She was a log cabin Republican who had was transitioning from man to woman while she was running.
Yeah.
The only reason I had her on the show is because I knew her. She's from my city.
Mm.
But I shouldn't say that in a negative way because that's kind of rude. I think I was also interested to know her views and why she reached that level in her life where she felt like she had to cross over while still trying to be a Republican. Go ahead, guys.
Well, I wanted to get in on the conversation when you guys were talking about the Bundys, and you said that they've been held in prison without a speedy trial and without being guilty, and you know, and that happens to thousands of people every year in the Rikers Prison in New York City.
The Rikers prison, they hold thousands of people without any kind of speedy trial or, you know, and without being guilty. They hold in there for quite a while, a couple of days, you know. And it happens a lot in Rikers. That's the
Well, it's happening all over the country. It's a basically an epidemic, and it falls right on the justice system. It falls on the prosecutor, the DA, and the judges.
Oh yeah, no, it happens.
That's
all over
where
the
it goes down to.
It's more popular in Rikers. Rikers has a notorious history of holding people for long times without being guilty, you know, in a speedy trial. Rikers is really popular for that.
Well, you can't blame the prison, is what I'm saying. No matter what prison it is, it always falls on the judge, the DA, and the prosecutor. Those are the ones that have the authority to let you out on bail or not. It's not the prison. That might be the one that gets blamed because of the capacity they have.
Oh, well, forget the bail. I mean, poor people can't afford the bail, so they're stuck in there, you know, if they whether or not.
There's bail bonds for that. There's not a lot of people can afford their own bail, but to have the right to an attorney and have the right to a speedy trial and have the right to a fair trial is where
bonds,
we're failing.
That's a monopoly, though, because, if you accept the bail bond, you're paying it for the rest of your life with little money
now,
you have. You know?
That's a product of the monopoly. The bail bond is not the monopoly. It's the product of the monopoly.
Yep, you could say that. Yep.
The real monopoly is between the prison systems, the owners, and the justice system. Because right now, as the laws stand, judges and prosecutors and DAs are allowed to be paid on the side for things they do, filling the prisons. And there's nothing to stop it because they can choose to follow the laws that they want.
Yeah. And what's funny is that, like, you know, the prisoners, you know, because, you know, some prisons are privately owned and they make profit of and having the prisoners work in jail, you know, make phone calls or make clothes or something like that. And they work for 20 cents or 10 cents an hour. They're getting paid 10 cents an hour. If they wanted to pay their bail bond, which is probably which could be like $10,000 or $100,000. They'll never afford it at 10 cents an hour.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just so funny. Prisoners, the little money they make in prison, they'll never be able to afford their bail to bail themselves out. They'll never be able to afford that. Well, I think
there should be changes made there. I might be unpopular for saying this, but I think if a prisoner is going to be allowed to work, I think they should make a regular minimum wage. But I don't think it should go to them. I think it should go to the crimes they've done to pay back for whatever, and the rest can be paid towards the prison. But I don't think there should be work being done for cents, because what's the point? That's ridiculous. Pay back your fines. Pay back the families that you violated if you're guilty of something. But, you know, these workers should be paid for work. That's why we don't have slavery anymore.
It's basically what you can buy on the contraband. Because the contraband is what a prisoner basically can buy, like Doritos. They can buy some soups, a soda, stuff like that. That's their contraband that they can buy. They can buy toilet paper, too, because, you know, some of them might not have it. And so you might be, you know, begging other prisoners for toilet paper. You can buy contraband, stuff like that. And that's, you know, when you're working, you know, for like 10 cents an hour, that'll get you just enough to be able to buy those contrabands.
Yeah, but how are these people ever going to pay back the families that they've wronged? If the ones that are really guilty, I'm only talking about the ones that are really guilty and they've actually hurt somebody or raped somebody or whatever, they need a way to pay restitution. So cents on the dollar is never going to get anything taken care of, and it's going to put us in debt. I mean, they can't even earn their own wage that it costs to keep them there.
Are you talking about prisoners? the prisoner.
Yeah, prisoner
yep.
is working. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're not supposed to pay it all back.
It's a new way of slavism.
It's something to make the prison system look good, so that they can say, "Oh yeah, see, we're making this reformed, quote unquote, reformed prisoner a useful person in society by making them pay back to the victim." But
here's the problem, because if they don't have enough prisoners, the company's not making enough money. So they have
right,
to have enough prisoners in that jail so they can get them to work so the company can make money. So they kind of push to keep those prisons full.
And that's what I'm talking about, that they don't care if the prisoners fulfill their restitution obligation. They're just looking to make sure that they have prisoners and that they look good so the federal government and the state governments can continue funding their prisons. So that's that restitution aspect of it is simply the judges and the courts' verification that they're doing something.
All right.
I hope we're not bursting your bubble, Ben, because there's a lot of stuff that, you know, folks, John's the same way. It's like, well, why can't you make that apple an apple? That's because the apple's been bitten by so many people and you know, that it's no longer an apple. It's everybody's germs.
I didn't create a bubble. I didn't create a bubble for anybody to burst.
Good.
I'm just taking it as I see it. I also had a guy that I met that he used to be in the forestry service for like 30 years, and he used to fight fires with prisoners all the time. Like the Forest Service would join with the prisoners and show them what to do right in the middle of an active fire. And I guess he fell into a hot spot, and he was in kind of a log jam, and the fire was coming at him really fast, and I guess he had his life saved by a prisoner that was a gang member. He was a Oakland Crip, he said. But he said that guy was the only one that knew that he fell in there, and he was the one that helped him pull him out. So that's kind of a cool story.
Yeah.
That shows you that there's good in everybody, and all we have to do
right.
is nurture. But we have to nurture it. And the problem is that our leaders, quote-unquote leaders, don't lead by nurturing. They lead by warfare, by military strength, by weaponry, show of weaponry. That's how our leaders lead. They're supposed to lead by teaching us, by having us understand civilization and living civilly, with civility. That's not how we're taught in America. From day one, they taught us that guns and the destruction and rape of people who don't have that kind of strength is the way to go. That's the whole, that's the point of this whole.
No, I wasn't taught that.
No, you might not have been taught that, but a vast number of your peers were, and that's how they keep their guns.
No, none of my peers. None of my peers have ever been taught anything like that. They wouldn't be my peers if that was the case.
Then they wouldn't have guns. They wouldn't
have
guns. Maybe the hunt. Maybe target.
And
are you trying to say that the gun culture is the rape culture? Because that's BS.
No. Here's the thing. Look, I mean, prisoners and police are both human beings. I mean, it doesn't mean because somebody's a prisoner doesn't mean he's evil. It doesn't mean somebody's a cop, he's a good guy. You know what I mean? They're both human beings. But the thing is, when a prisoner kills somebody, he's in jail. And when a cop kills somebody, he gets awarded. He gets a, you know what I mean? He gets to be, gets awards and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And that's the difference.
No, you don't get awards for killing people. But the thing I can attribute being a gun happy cop is I'll connect it to construction work. Whenever there's a new guy on a crew, like if we hired somebody tomorrow who's never used a nail gun before, do you think we're going to give them a nail gun to start working on the house? Hell no. He's going to get to bang nails with a hammer until he can figure out how to do it right, and then he gets the nail gun. You don't just give somebody a nail gun or a gun and just let them run the world.
Don called up, but now he's back in the queue. Don, you're back in.
Let me kind of explain a little bit further. I mean, the difference is the prisoners, you know, they kill people and they're stuck in jail, and the other murderers they get to wear blue suits and a badge and drive around in a car. So that's just the difference.
I don't think it's a good thing to do to imply that every cop is a murderer just because they're wearing a badge. I think that's totally
wrong. No, of course not. But I'm talking about just the murder. I'm talking about just the murderers. Not in general all cops are and all robbers. I'm just talking about all murderers. Just the murder. Just the people that commit murders. The people that commit murders. Like the civilians that commit murder are in jail, and the cops that commit murder are mostly not in jail. You know what I mean?
Well, to go to that point. So here's a couple things. One, how many murders can a cop get before he gets reviewed? Every time there's a shooting, they have a whole review case. They analyze every bullet. What was he doing? And a lot of times, they kind of wave, look the other way, like, okay, we'll give him a pass. But how many murders does a cop actually get away with? Can he, like, kill 200 people without getting stopped? And number two, if they're terrorists, as one of our members has purported here, do they have meetings? Is there an agenda? Do they have a book where they all, you know, like we all meet and here's our plan. We're going to annihilate all African Americans. How many do we want to kill? Well, our goal this year is 2,000 until there's totally the society is destroyed. Like, is there a game plan for this? I mean, is there meetings? Is this organized?
Yes. That's what they call the Aryan Nation. That's what they call the KKK. That's what they call all the brother.
Yeah, and all
the corrupt system.
So the cops are the KKK.
They don't have the cop book of killing, but they do have the unofficial cop book of killing.
My best friend in high school is Howard Russell. He's a sheriff. I don't know any of the KKK meetings he went to. I don't know him shooting and killing anyone on the job. 30 years. He's a really cool dude. So I'm not sure which, I know there's bad cops. How many percentage of cops do you think are bad? Do you think 90% or 2%? Because we're doing generalizations here.
That doesn't matter. None of that even matters how many cops are good or bad. That doesn't even matter at all. The problem is the laws and regulations let them get away.
No, it does matter. I think it's probably 0.0%.
It matters.
It matters because you have to identify the problem. If you go, black people are lazy, you go, well, that's a generalization. Well, how many are lazy? How many are you saying that? Or white people are killers. How many? I mean, identify the population.
Hey, guys, remember when we did that show on the 25th anniversary of the L.A. riots, and it was proven that Daryl Gates created a culture where he legalized chokeholds, there was excessive force, there was a culture of violence. I think if you want to determine between a good and a bad cop, you kind of have to see, okay, how are they going to conform to rules? Where does their conscience intersect with the way things are done? Is people going to speak up when there's like a drug bust and a cop wants to take some money? So, I mean, all those things factor in.
Exactly. You get to a good point on the L.A. riots. I remember the L.A. riots, and they beat up when the cops, the white cops,
beat up what was the name, that black guy they beat up in the
Rodney King.
Rodney King. Because that, I mean, that got a lot of publicity, and that, you know, and that, I mean, and there was a lot of you know, people that were mistreated in Los Angeles. I used to live in Los Angeles, but there was a lot of people that were mistreated in Los Angeles that got no publicity at all, you know, and very little. And that was the only thing that got big publicity, because he was actually, you know, he was a political person that was really popular. And so that really, that was the final thing that finally triggered, after all the Bush and all the, you know, the cops are beating up on people and stuff like that, after all that shit, it finally got that push to finally trigger. And a lot of people, at that point, a lot of people were angry, and, you know, it started to riot. And
that was kind of a threshold, because it was a video camera. It was pre-YouTube, and it was a video that was released to the media that exposed the LAPD's culture. So, and then when they discovered in the city of Pacoima, when that other kid was killed, the 20-year-old from a chokehold, which was, he wasn't on PCP, like they said, then that whole era opened up, where the accountability factor.
Yes, and that was what caused that was a long time ago. But now we have a new threshold that pushed the Black Lives Matter to start, and that also, as you saw, the riot that happened a year ago. I'm trying to remember, what was it? It was in it happened in Ferguson. Yeah.
It'll be three years this July, believe it or not.
Well, let me ask a question about Ferguson. So the difference between Ferguson and what happened with Lavoie Finicum in Oregon is the media made the difference. As soon as Mike Brown was killed, they released the name of the officer and showed his face on all the major media. And so that officer's life was basically put in danger all across the nation. Everybody hated his face. And when Lavoie Finicum was killed, he was shot by multiple officers, I think, but they sealed the records of all the names involved, including the FBI agents and the undercover agents. And there was undercover agents in the car. They were at the protest too. They were relaying false information back and forth, escalating things also. So why was not any of that released? But in Ferguson, all the information was released. It's like the media incited the whole thing.
Yeah, the media is usually control of it. Basically controls, you know, public opinion and everything else. I mean, they're the mainstream media. They're, you know, they're the ones that can get the word around.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Lavoie Finicum? Oh, go ahead, John.
How do we stop the terrorist police network? How do we infiltrate, weed them out, identify them, and correct the problem?
Well, we need more openness, everybody needs to get more information about it and not have everything secretive.
That's what internal affairs is supposed to do. They're supposed to weed out everybody connected with some corruption and get them out of there. But the internal affairs obviously is not doing their job right.
They did it in Cleveland. They did it in Cleveland after Tamar Rice was killed. They went and did a federal investigation and determined what types of excessive force was used, and then they gave the recommendations to the Cleveland cops. Now, it didn't work in the, I can't remember his name, the guy in Chicago who was killed in cold blood in the middle of the street, somebody in McDonald's or something. It didn't work in that case, but it worked in some cities.
Yeah.
And the thing that happened at the Bundy Ranch before all those murders were done by the FBI and whatnot, you know, I mean, they closed off the ranch, like they completely bordered it,
So no more protesters were allowed to come in, you know what I mean, or other kind of people were basically the civilians were allowed to come in. So everybody was allowed, like a lot of people were allowed to go out, but nobody was allowed to go in. So basically they kind of shrunk the protest and made it smaller by controlling it that way.
Well, the thing is, the difference is between that riot, the riot in Missouri and the protest in Oregon. The huge difference is the one in Missouri was complete chaos. That was chaos and destruction. And the one in Oregon was messages of education, and they wrote letters to everybody who's in charge, the Department of Interior, governors, mayors, they wrote letters and they weren't answered. So the protest was never about violence, but it was confronted with violence.
I think
exactly.
You know, I think the Ferguson thing was first of all, that was a very long protest and a very violent protest. Now, the federal government came in there, as Don mentioned before, and determined that the black people were getting 70% of the parking tickets and other type of municipal tickets and unduly persecuted. But there was violence, there was looting, and that was kind of like the new wave of police brutality awareness. And then that Tamar Rice situation sprung up shortly after, about 5 months later, where the 12-year-old was shot with a toy gun in Cleveland. And I think now that Trump's in office, the there's more like border and drawing lines between what people's belief systems are. But you haven't really seen a lot of protests since the week of the election. Like,
well, here's
up
important
in, you
thing.
See, yeah.
In Ferguson, you had a lot of locals protesting, and it was kind of basically a city, and you can have a lot of people gather around and protest, you know. But over there at the Bunny Ranch, you know, it was kind of like the, you know, in the desert, in the, you know, in the farm area, in the farms, and it's not a big city. So, you know, and a lot of people were showing up to protest, but they weren't allowed to come inside. They were being held back, you know, but, you know, because the way they border things out. So the protests end up being a lot smaller than that it could have been. It could have been a lot bigger, but it can happen because the way they boarded everything.
Well, I think you're mixing up Oregon and Nevada because they were totally different scenarios.
I wasn't saying that there's not any protests. There's just not massive scale protests like there were about a year ago.
Well, there's been a lot of universities.
Would you guys agree?
Yeah,
I heard that they kind
of.
Yeah.
Well, the FBI is trained to border a city in a way to shrink the protests and not have it grow big. They're trying to do it that way, you know. You know, they just don't want a mass of people gathered to gather around, you know.
Right. And
I
that's
guess,
how
you
isolate and identify.
By the way, you guys, we've been on the air now an hour and 23 minutes, and this is my last night in LA, and I'm going to have to wrap it up quick. You guys can finish if you want. But my conclusion is that violence will never stop, but how we define it and predict it is rather obscure. I just wish that if people do kill and they premeditate it, it doesn't make it any better. I just wish that people would find common ground and other ways to examine their own soul and their perspective and not maybe be so aligned with extreme groups that they have to feel like they have to just throw, like Ben said earlier tonight, just throw their life away over some political cause that they're not going to gain from. So that's my conclusion. If someone else wants to go or continue talking, I have to make a beeline to my relative. And nice seeing you today, John.
Well, my kind of conclusion, not really a conclusion, kind of just a speech. But yes, it's true. Violence will never stop. And also the way the mainstream media portrays violence will never stop. And the way we're misinformed of the violence by the mainstream media will never stop. So many of those things, of those corruptions and by the mainstream media and our justice systems will never stop. So because of those things, our violence is never going to stop.
Okay, that's a pretty well-rounded conclusion. Anybody else want to go?
Yeah, I'll go. I think people need to take politics out of death or violence, because if you can remove your own biases and see just a crime as the law states, or as somebody's violations or rights were violated, people need to stop wondering if it's a right side against the left side or a left against right crime, because there shouldn't be anything that takes the edge off of the crime. And I see that a lot, especially that's why I bring up the Bundys a lot. The whole thing is so political. If you actually read some of the comments from people are, you know, sick. Like they, you know, they say, well, good, another right wing terrorist got killed and he deserved it. And that's how people are that are, they're so political that even a murder is another victory. So I think people need to take their biases out of the crime.
Like
right.
The three white guys who held a Muslim woman, the two Muslim women, they're heroes just because they helped protect somebody. But the Jeremy Christian who got arrested, it's kind of scary to think who is he a hero to?
Right, and obviously he had nothing to lose.
Right, and he's still alive and he's in custody and he hasn't answered his arraignment claim yet. John or Don, do you want to throw in your two cents before we conclude?
Let's see. I can throw something in, and that is I think that we can make things better. We can make things worse. We want change, so I think you have to be realistic and figure out what change can you make and of what effect it has. You know, people can complain about something, but how are you going to fix it? What's your solution? What's the move you can make? What's our next move? And I work in customer service. Person will call and be very upset. Say, I ordered this and there was a mistake and your person messed up. And they kind of go into the rant and I kind of go, what would you like to see happen? Oh, I want this and this. Let me do this for you right now. Because we can sit there and sort out who is wrong and argue it down. But the real bottom line is, what do you want? You want peace? You want love? You want a job? You want whatever? People need to kind of consider, am I making more noise and static, or am I fixing a problem? Am I part of the solution? Or am I just, you know, just another symptom? And am I a victim? And I think collectively, when the whole society pitches together and does their part, is realistic. Like, things aren't going to change overnight. We are who we are, so we got to deal with who we are and try to accept and then improve. And I think there is a big push to this kind of like, oh, I'm fat, just accept me for being fat. Yes, but, you know, also try to be the best person you can be, whatever it is. Like, you know, it's like I cannot take a shower for a month and walk around and say, this is just me, this is natural me. Yeah, but I could be better, you know. I could be a better me and encourage the best behavior. So I encourage everyone to have your best behavior and be part of the solution, and you know, throw some positive energy and make the world a better place, you know. Sing Kumbaya.
We only have Don left, and I don't know if he's with us. Don Gallimore. Okay, I'm going to cut to the song. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And next week we'll be airing from northern Minnesota. I enjoyed John's company today, and I hope to see Don this summer. And I'll be up in Grants Pass, Oregon later this year. I don't know how far you are from that, Ben. How far are you from Grants Pass, Oregon?
That is, I think that is farther south in Oregon than halfway. I think it's about halfway.
Oh, really?
It's about halfway to where my grandparents live in Northern California. I think Grants Pass is the halfway mark. It's about.
Well, I don't. You know, it probably won't be convenient to meet you then, but you know, you never know. So, you live near Seattle, right?
Yep.
Don't you live near Seattle? Okay, well,
yeah.
If the East Coast and the West Coast can't save America, maybe the Midwest can. With that, I'll end the show. I'm going to play John's song, and let's all keep it together. And we have some new promotional pictures, and I'll be mailing out some business cards soon to Albert and Ben and Don. So God bless you all, and I'll see you next week. Have a good one.
All right. See you.
And good night.
That's the game of life. That's the game of love. People need to know that. there's something more after they die.
Parting words, Yoder?
Well, that was The Game of Life, and that was one of my most profoundly insightful songs. I mean, to me, I like it. I love the message. I just think it's spot on. I thought, you know, music-wise, it was just like a home run. It's a song I've played for other friends, and they're kind of like, yeah, yeah, it's a nice song. But I think if you go for the meaning of it, kind of go beneath the layers, I think it's significant. And, so, you know, something I'm not proud, but I just thought, you know, like it hit the goal of what I wanted to express, you know, as far as the sentiment. And, I think, it'd be nice. Now, has Albert left us, or is he still on?
Everyone board? Left us, but Don.
No, wow. We're all
maybe. Don, are you there? The Game of Life has brought us to the pitcher's mound, and are we going to throw a strike or a curve ball? But let's not try to injure our brother.
All
yeah.
Right.
Don?
Hello. I just wanted to We're, tell everybody good night. I've been working my butt off for the show, while the show was going on, so...
I hope to see you the end of July, Don, early the end of July, and I got to see John today, and I was happy.
Very good. But we want you to be happy because living up in the frozen tundra of Duluth, sometimes happiness is hard to come by.
It's a rite of suffrage. I don't know what it is, but I might not be there very much longer. Time will tell.
No, you've done a lot of things.
I might be coming back to the 90210 because one of my friends has a room for rent. So we'll
okay.
see what happens,
well,
Gallimore.
Yeah, well, you'll be able to find a job doing what you're doing. So don't be afraid.
We'll table that on the next show. I gotta go. My relatives are mad at me now, and I gotta chop off the rest of the show. Okay. So
All right, Beth.
Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Good night, John.
Good night, everybody.
Night, Jane.
Night, John.
Good night. Have a safe ride home, Don.
Yeah, all over the city and then home. Yeah, you got it. Thank you.
Woo-hoo.
Good night, y'all. Take care.
Good night.